call House Finance to order. We do have several members absent today. Representative Moses is gone, and Representative Chenault has been excused for some time. Representative Kelly is en route. Stokes is excused, and Representative Hopkins is ill. So, for the record, though, who we do have here is Representative Holm, Representative Foster, myself, Chairman Meyer, Representative Kutula, Representative Jewell, and Representative Wyrick. We're going to take up two bills today. First bill is House Bill 361, and the second bill is House Bill 381, Tobacco Revenue. Let's start with House Bill 361, and we have Dan Kowski and Jeff Gubler, Brian Butcher, please join us. And before we get started, though, if I can have a motion, please, if it's possible.
Yeah, I'd like to move that we adopt the blank committee substitute of HB 361, the version 24 that calls for Bill 205-8 for the section purposes.
Okay, any objections? CS before us? Seeing none, then we have the CS before us. And before we get into public testimony, if gentlemen want to go ahead and present the bill to us and explain it to us, and for the record again, if you could tell us who you are and who you're affiliated with, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Fowski. I'm CEO of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and with me are Joe Dubler, Chief Financial Officer, and Brian Butcher, our Communications Director and Government Liaison. What we have here is CS for House Bill, I think CS, right? CS for House Bill 361, which is a bill relating to the transfer plan and how it's calculated and how we pay monies to the state. And I have Mr. Dubler here because we're now going to enter the exciting world of what affects us when a change to the Governmental Accounting Standards Boards occurs, which is really what occurred. And so it affected the way that we could pay the dividend and still keep our financials in proper order, in terms of that the term net income is no longer used in reference to governmental accounting. It's changing net assets. So if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like Joe Dubler to explain the technicalities of the change that were made.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Dubler. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Finance Director for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. CS for House Bill 361 is an adjustment to the current transfer plan that the corporation has in place in statute in 1856-089C, which references net income in the statute and provides for the corporation to pay a percentage of net income in each year as a dividend to the state. The, as Dan pointed out, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, with their GASB statement number 34, changed the generally accepted accounting principles for governmental entities and basically did away with an income statement and balance sheet that we're all used to seeing. And they've replaced those with a statement of changes in net assets and a statement of net assets. The term net income no longer exists on the corporation's financial statement. So when we go to the statute to find out what our dividend is to be and it references net income, we have a problem. The reason we haven't approached this before is fiscal year 2007 is the first year that we make a payment based upon net income. The prior years were all a static $103 million. So we've have this legislation to correct the statute to, or to conform the statute to current generally accepted accounting principles. Basically what this bill would do is two things. It would change the current reference to net income to adjusted change in net assets, which I'll explain the adjusted portion later, but that number is roughly the estimate of what the net income number used to represent. The adjusted portion of it is another change that the GASB 34 did is it does not allow the corporation to account for certain transfers back to the state as reductions directly to capital. In other words, before, when we made a direct cash payment to the state, the cash amount that we transferred was deducted directly from the capital account called contributed capital on the corporation's balance sheet. It did not go through the income statement. They've done away with that accounting treatment, and now all of those transfers have to go through our statement of changes in net assets, thus reducing the bottom line of the corporation in the form of change in net asset number. That change, what it's done, sorry,
it's riveting.
what that change has done is it's dropped the corporation's net income, our bottom line, by approximately $40 million a year because of all the transfers we make back to the state that we didn't have before we had came to agreement with the transfer plan. So what this bill does is it brings us back to where we were when we came up with the original plan. The second thing that this does is if you look on the first page, section one, we've added under the current statutory authority we have under creation of subsidiaries, we've added to the projects that the corporation can finance through those subsidiaries, other capital projects. And we felt that the limitation that we had with school construction facilities and ports and harbors was a little restrictive, and that other capital projects would give the governor and the legislature the freedom to finance other projects that may come up from time to time for subsidiaries such as the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation, which I believe you have a bill up next on. That corporation and any other corporation created by AHFC would be able to finance just about any capital project that the state wished to build.
If I may, Mr. Chair, the bottom line is under the old way, if in order to adhere, we would be showing a change in net assets of $40 million, which would mean, based on statutes that were passed 2 years ago, we now pay a percentage of our net income, which is really a percentage of our change in net assets to the state. We need the change so that we can therefore justify sending $80 million to the state. So that's the happy part of all this. It also helps us on Wall Street in that everything is in balance and that we're all talking about the same stuff when financial analysts and others look. And it gets us back in line with the original intent of the legislation that was passed and signed into law 2 years ago. And it was a change outside our purview. It's stuff that's done on occasion. And we're just trying to get everything so it's matching and in sync, and everyone's speaking the same language. So at the end of the day, the governor and through the corporation, when it submits its budget under the Executive Budget Act, there is within that budget an amount of $81.2 million, I think, which is the total capital budget of the corporation, and we submit it this way every year. 95%, that we're in the first year, we're 95% of that amount. The actual change in net assets for the corporation was 85.2 or 85.3. 95% of that amount represents 81.2, and that's the amount that's been submitted per state statute to the legislature. And then this change in language gets all that working in the right direction.
Thank you for that explanation. And by the way, there is a new fiscal note that I think explains that the first fiscal note didn't show any additional revenue, and the new fiscal note shows change in revenue $42,500,000.
Right.
Very good. Any questions for our
I noticed between the new adopted CS, the new the creation of the subsidiaries that we're doing, the first section of the bill. So I was looking at the, and I know we're trying, in this process, we try and stay on the bill that's in front of us, but we've got another bill that has to do with capital projects right behind us. And we've got the University of Alaska placed in both of them, and I'm just wondering, gosh, how bottomless is this pit? And I understand the need, I really do, but I just wonder how many different pieces of the pie that we're going to keep going that way. Because one of the areas that I tend to look at is the first one that you had, which is school construction. And I noticed missing from that was major maintenance, but be that as it may, I guess it could get brought up under other capital projects. But they seem synonymous somehow, school construction, major maintenance. So I just kind of, I couldn't help but, you know, those things being brought to my attention. And I was just wondering, as this was being written, in terms of the facilities for the University of Alaska? Are they the same facilities that are being proposed by the next bill, or is there something else?
If I may, through the chair, Representative Jewell, the bill that you have on the CS, that language is the original language that created the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation. And all that's changing is what we've added is other capital projects to give the legislature more room to, if in fact following us and the agreement to pass the tobacco bonds, it's the tobacco market on bonds has improved dramatically. It's now become an issue that should be discussed, and the bill is coming forward that the state might have another opportunity to capitalize on the utilization of those proceeds. This language here then just simply says if in fact they do that, the two bills are in sync and they can expand what it is they might want to do with those proceeds if in fact that bill were to pass.
And thank you for pointing that out to me. Sometimes I do forget that the only changes sometimes in existing language are the underlying sections. So thank you for that.
Okay.
But when you got two of these back to back, it just
correct.
Somehow can't help but capture your attention.
I understand.
Good point, Representative Jewell. Yeah, all we're doing is expanding what was already in existing statute.
And I think, just go ahead, if I understand this, it sounds like it actually allows the state to be able to receive a lot more.
Well, under our bill, certainly, Representative Jewell, with the fiscal note, my changing our change goes from a dividend from 40 to 82 million.
Right.
And under the tobacco, which will be explained, that's certainly another issue of a potential cash stream coming into the state.
82 million is about right for school construction and major maintenance on an annual basis.
Well, sir, we need to hold out a little bit for HFC's budget, if I may be so bold. And,
or you could use the tobacco funds for school maintenance. Right? Anything's possible. This is finance. We can do
that's what I like.
All right, good. Okay, any other questions?
Thanks. What would have happened to the money? How would it have been used if this change wasn't made and it didn't go out into a dividend?
Through the chair, Representative, it would still be remain within the corporation. It would just be in a different area where it would not be calculated as part of the change in net assets, thus subject to appropriation to the state through the existing transfer plan to the state. But it wouldn't disappear.
Understand that. But I mean, how would the corporation use that money? And does this, I mean, it's a lot of money just to have an accounting change. Shift it so now we can appropriate it for other uses.
Well, that's an interesting through the chair. We have and we've gone from an area where it was automatically $103 million a year, which became troubling, and we came to the legislature a couple years ago because of the business activity of the corporation is very vibrant, but the market around us was changing. In other words, interest rates had dropped significantly, so a significant piece of our bottom line was interest income. And we were refunding a huge $2 billion over a two-year period. We did refundings on bonds or refis because people were refinancing their homes. And so then the bonds that you formerly had out there on a mortgage or money out there at 6%, you're now paying 4%. So it's not that business was bad. It was just that the bottom line, the amount of money made available, and for us to continue to pay $103 million was becoming troubling. So the legislature, and I commend them for that, listened to us and agreed, and the administration, and we got the language changed. And so now this represents the absolute intent was to pay a percentage of net income, which is no longer called net income. It's change in net assets. So we never viewed it as monies that we would have had at our disposal. What could it be used for? Absolutely many, many things. And maybe that's a debate we'll have down the road in terms of pressure coming on the corporation to do other things, as we're now seeing a swing, of course, away from, we've gone from extreme affordability issues around the year 2000-2001 to 9-1-1 to the lowest interest rates in a generation to all kinds of hybrid financing schemes, none of which we are real excited about in terms of ARMs and interest-only loans, which if you follow this news across the country are starting to become quite troubling. than the rest of the country to an area, I think, as Alaska's economy remains very vibrant, and it is, but certain you know, issues take place where affordability always becomes an issue. You know, that old saying that the toughest thing is cash at closing. Well, now we're into a situation where maybe the corporation comes back and said, based on pressure, based on a changing economic environment, based on a change on huge gas line projects, pressure on the economy, pressure on housing, that this money could go for a variety of uses, from first-time home buyer to seniors to disabled to working poor, any, you know, any kind of subject. And that's certainly stuff that we're keeping track of, and we'll be back on those issues. I hope I answered your question.
No, you answered it. I just, you know, I don't want to see your program be underfunded for this reason, and I'm sure that you wouldn't do that, so it's good.
And I appreciate that comment. Did you want
to say for the record, this is Brian Butcher, Governmental Relations and Public Affairs Director for AHFC. We brought this forward as being more in line with the intent of the legislation we passed. So I know at first blush, I've talked to a few folks that have said, you were supposed to pay 40 and you're paying 80, but we actually brought this forward to the governor's office and said, this is, you know, with these accounting changes, this is what we feel needs to happen.
Yeah. Thank you. That's
okay, very good. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Is there anybody online for public testimony? Okay, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Any discussion with the committee members? Okay, let me just take a brief at ease here for a second. Committee discussion, Senator Foster.
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move HP 361 out of committee with attack. Zero fiscal notes with the individual recommendation.
Okay, now there is a new fiscal note, which we should probably go ahead and state the date, February 1st, 06. That's the one that you intended.
That's the one that I need.
Okay.
Oh, revenue note.
But it should show the revenue considered.
Okay. Yeah, it shows the revenue of 42.5 for the
47.
Okay. Okay, very good. Any objections? Seeing none, that bill passes out of committee. Okay, we'll go ahead and take up the House Bill 381 if the presenters want to come forward. Start on that. Okay, so we should have Charles Praska, and we do, Devin Mitchell, and
Mike Barnhill.
Mike Barnhill, thank you, Mike. Okay, they're going to be presenting, and there is no CS, so with that, I'll just turn the floor over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Cheryl Fraska, Office of Management and Budget. We're using the team approach following the AHFC model of advocacy to see if we're as effective in our results. But the way we've broken this up is I'm going to talk about how we came upon this mechanism as a vehicle to fund some of our capital projects. And then Devin is going to speak to the issues of the technical issues of how this refinancing of tobacco bonds works. And then Mike is here to keep us both out of trouble as a representative from the Department of Law. So if that would be okay. While we were working on the budget this fall, the Department of Revenue approached us about an opportunity to refinance these tobacco bonds, which those of you who were in the legislature in 2000 and 2001 may recall having approval of a tobacco financing through a subsidiary that was set up under AHFC. And that was before this administration, so frankly, I kept putting them off about, we got other things to worry about now, until they told me how much they were talking about. Then they caught our attention, because at that time it was the estimate of the additional revenues that we could generate was between $80 and $140 million. And so So we decided it was worth our time to sit down and talk with them, which we did, and that this legislation is what resulted from using this approach. And Devin will explain why now, because that was our question: why now? Could we do this next year? Gee, we've got all these revenues. Is this the right time? And so we went through that kind of a discussion. So Devin can speak to those issues. In your bill file, for those of you who weren't here in 2000 and 2001, we did have a fact sheet about the tobacco bonds as a mechanism, and it talks about what was approved in 2000 and 2001. And back then, the proceeds of the bonds, it was about $93 million in 2000, went for school construction projects. And in 2001, about $135 million of proceeds was authorized, and it went to fund school, university, and ports and harbor projects. And so in terms of our proposal for FY07, this legislation authorizes using $89.3 million of the proceeds for university projects. And so those university projects are listed on page 2 of the bill. But in addition to that, you'll also see these same projects in our FY07 capital budget. So in the capital budget, it shows the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation bonds as the fund source for the University of Alaska capital project. So that's where you'll see them again. And then we've also, because we took the conservative dollar amount, we went for $90 million instead of $80 million, or $140 million. Our proposal is also that any proceeds greater than the $89.3 that we've set aside for the university projects, that those funds be available for construction of the Matsu Jail. And at this point, we will have an amendment that will come to you as we continue our work with the Matsu Borough on how exactly we can design, build, and finance the Matsu Jail. So right now, our proposal is to just sort of set those funds in a construction fund, and then for the corrections in a fund, and then we'll come back to you with more specifics on that. And again, we don't know the exact number yet of what the bonds will generate. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them or turn them over to those that really know how this whole thing works.
Any questions for Cheryl? I'll just briefly, Cheryl, this has no impact on the 20% that goes to the tobacco cessation program.
No, right? It does not.
All right.
Here's it.
Barbara.
Can I follow on that?
Sure.
Why not?
Devin Mitchell, Department of Revenue Debt Manager for the State of Alaska. And it might help if I explain a little bit, Representative Weirock, that what's contemplated here is taking advantage of an opportunity that exists in the marketplace that has been absent for several years, and that is a further leveraging of the 80% of the master settlement agreement that was already sold to the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation. And so, in fact, selling an additional portion of that settlement to raise further capital for projects in the state of Alaska. So rather than impacting the 20% that's currently used for other programs, this would just be a further future obligation on the 80% that's already obligated. And so right now we're looking at a final maturity in the 2016 range, and it would extend that to the 2040 range, plus or minus depending on the final number that's incorporated into the legislation.
The other question was, did you want to go ahead and do your presentation?
Yeah, that's fine. We'll wait.
And then
there's a lot to talk about.
Okay. For the record, Representative Kelly has joined us. Okay. Mr. Mitchell, go ahead.
Thank you. So the history on the tobacco bonds, I think Cheryl hit on it a little bit, as well as the previous presenters who are also experts on tobacco securitization. Were 2000 and 2001, where again we had an opportunity to issue some of the first tobacco bonds that the market saw, and that's an important point, because what's being sold here are payments that are coming from participants in the master settlement agreement on the tobacco side, tobacco producers. So the money is coming from a separate credit from the state of Alaska, and no matter who out there as an issuer is selling this paper, it's going to be the same underlying credit. You can dress it up with a structure that suits you as an issuer's needs, but there's only the same credit regardless of investor, and so there's a limited market. And at that point in time, there was a lot of discussion of the possibility of the market becoming saturated and the ability to sell this type of debt to end. And in fact, we saw that happen in the subsequent years to 2001, where the tobacco transactions that occurred wound up requiring that the issuers put some form of backstop, additional credit support forward for those transactions for them to be accepted by the market. So something like a moral obligation pledge or some tax pledge that might have been supportive. Since then, we've seen some favorable legislation that has again allowed standalone tobacco transactions to occur, and in addition to that, more aggressive securitization of this revenue stream further into the future. And so that's come to the, as Cheryl pointed out, came to the attention of the Department of Revenue, and we've discussed it with the staff at the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation, and believe that now again is one of the points in time that is available to the state to take advantage of an opportunity. And I'm trying to see if there was any other point I wanted to make with those points that I've made earlier to Representative Weirach. I guess the final point that I would make is that it is market-driven, and that there is still, it's a fluid market, meaning that the litigation situation that exists nationwide has the potential to impact the ability to leverage the future receipts, as well as the interest rate environment that will exist at the point in time that this transaction is closed. And so that was the reason for the flexibility being built into the bill. If you identify a dollar amount certain, it's very difficult to say today in February what might be available from this type of transaction come June, because there could be legal decisions, there could be interest rate shifts, and both of those, there could be other factors that all will impact the ability to obtain or to leverage this revenue stream. So that's an important consideration when you are considering projects for the list. Every time that I talk to the folks that are interested in brokering these bonds to investors, the number that might be achievable changes, and it's on a weekly basis. If you ask today, it's going to be different than yesterday, then it's going to be different from tomorrow. So important to be aware of. And I think that's really it, unless there are questions of the committee.
We do have a few questions. I'll start out. So when you sell the bonds, is this tobacco settlement money, is it perceived to be pretty secure to the investors?
We would anticipate that there would be ratings assigned to these bonds that would vary depending upon the length of time that you were securitizing into the future. So the lowest rating might be a double B type rating, which is a fairly low rating in the regular course of business for the state of Alaska. So there is risk that investors are assuming. The coupons associated with the bonds are going to be commensurate with that risk. And so that's one of the points that I meant to make earlier that I didn't, that was again emphasized in 2000 and 2001, that the MSA, the Master Settlement Agreement itself, has a lot of risks. There is uncertainty as to whether it will continue into the future if there were bankruptcies or further litigation that impacted the industry. And by selling these bonds, we're selling the risk that future settlement payments aren't received, to passing that risk to investors. And so there is a cost for passing that risk, but it's a reasonable cost.
Okay, very good. And And so you're saying there's a range here between 89 million and 140 million that you could potentially bond for? Is that safe to say? Or?
Mr. Chairman, they'd indicated it was between 80 and 140 million when we were working on this in late November, early December. And as Devin indicated, though, the number does change given other conditions in the marketplace and in litigation, I guess. So that number could be greater than 140, or it could be less.
I know Representative Jewell wants to ask this question. So this pot of money here, 80 million to 140, could be used for school construction, could be used for school maintenance or other projects other than what you listed here today, is that correct?
Oh, no, Mr. Chairman. But the answer is yes, Mr. Chairman.
Very good, thank you, Chair.
In terms of, and it just needs to be a capital project, and using bond proceeds, there's certain requirements in that regard.
I just want to make sure I hadn't misspoken to Representative Jewell on that.
More comment than a question. You know, over the years, the university has really been growing. I think the legislature, as well as the third floor, regardless of who's been at the third floor, has helped in that endeavor. And I think about every step of the way, most of us, myself included, have tried to be helpful in that process. Whether it's adding to the base or capital needs, because we recognize that the institution is really kind of the payment we need to get the economic security that we'd all like to see all over the state. And not germane to this bill, but one of the balancing acts that we always seem to face this morning, I was listening a little bit to, I think it was this morning, to the new supplemental proposal that's out there. And the grousing that was going on with the energy needs and stuff with rural Alaska. And I know that it's not related to this bill, but I just want to make a point. Gosh, for what's being asked for with regards to those issues compared to some of these issues, they're kind of small beans. And yet we have to go through the grousing, and it sets up everybody starting to have to feel defensive. And that's a tough atmosphere to try and get anything done in. And then when I, at least, you know, this may not preclude anything else from happening, but when I see only two things being addressed, and I know the needs of both of them, whether it's a prisoner that's in-state so we can quit sending our business out to Arizona, and our people, maybe more importantly, and the capital needs of the university, we're still faced with that. With a court case that's kind of a cloud over our heads, if you will, with the Casale decision, or the Casale case, about school construction and major maintenance. And nowhere where I've looked, whether it's the capital budget or anywhere else, have I seen anything addressing new school construction or major maintenance for schools in this year's budget. I understand what we did last year, and I know that was a big chunk. But we addressed major maintenance issues and not school construction issues last year, predominantly. And still that's being ignored. And so I just raise those issues as concerns as I look at this. And I say that hoping that as we move down the next 90 days of session, that we can come to consensus on how to get all of this done.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Jewell. Actually, Representative Jewell, I have a question from your comments there. And maybe, can you give us an idea of when we'll have a better idea as far as the marketability of these?
bonds, will it be before end of the session? Or?
I think that when you get close to a time that this bill might pass, regardless of whether that was end of session or tomorrow, that you would be able to get a more refined number. So, meaning that as you, when you start narrowing that window between today and the date you're going to enter the market, that's when you can start to get a little more certain. You can become more and more certain as you narrow that window.
Okay. Now you mentioned something about some court decisions, expected court decisions, and how they may impact the bonds. Can you elaborate any more on that, or is that something I should ask? And how does that affect the marketability of these bonds?
For the record, Mike Barnhill, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law. Chair Meyer, there's been litigation over the past several years in the state of Illinois regarding cigarette liability, and there was a huge award that a judge made against Philip Morris. It was $10 billion. That was recently overturned by the Illinois Supreme Court. So in the wake of that decision, it was felt, my understanding is, I'm not a market expert, but my understanding is that the markets felt like that created a better climate for tobacco bonds. So that's one significant recent decision.
Okay, very good. Chris
Amara? Yeah, just following the value of these had been sold last fall compared to now, we've made a substantial amount of money just by waiting today, isn't that correct, the value of these?
Through the chair, Representative Weirach, yes, the value that's available to the state has increased. It was December 15th when the Illinois Supreme Court ruled in favor of Philip Morris. So yeah, that had a huge impact. I guess I have a little sheet here. So there's a case pending before the Florida Supreme Court and another case in the Justice Department.
It's hard to say, you're Mr. Chair. I think my predecessor did the same thing. I heard today that there was a decision out of the Oregon Supreme Court affirming a $70 million judgment in favor of a tobacco plaintiff. So that's, you know, $70 million is a far cry from $10 billion. But every day there may be changes in the world of litigation with respect to tobacco. It's just hard to predict.
Was the value roughly $15 million? I'm trying to get what I understood the value of the amount was. Do you know what it's increased from, say, from October to date?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Weirach, the estimates we've been told now since mid-December was gone from 140 at the top to 180, and with the potential of being 194. So that's the latest.
I just think in other words, it argues for some prudence on the action of the bill.
That's right. Good point. And if I, just one thing that you could clear up for me, Mr. Mitchell, is the MSA is a 25-year agreement. Is that correct? No?
Mr. Chair, the MSA provides for an indefinite stream of payments to the state of Alaska.
Indefinite?
Indefinite.
Forever. Why and how?
Yeah. Forever.
Why and how?
That's what the agreement provides.
That's just, okay.
Okay, very good. And so, Devin, you're proposing going out to year 2024. Did I understand that correctly?
Mr. Chair, yes. The latest analysis that has suggested a continually higher number has had an anticipated final maturity in 2040. It would have a similar structure to earlier deals where you have this extended repayment or amortization of the loan, but then an expected, if the MSA most likely scenario comes to pass, which the MSA is adjusted by interest and by inflation and consumption, and so there's, you're dealing with this volatile revenue stream, but that is the expectation.
Okay, very good. Yes. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
this
is Dan Fauske. I'm Vice President of Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation. I don't get to use that title very often. I just wanted to help Devin and to get a mental kind of thought process going. These bonds are a windfall to the state, and they were marketed as such. You have to not think of them in terms like you would a state GO or a revenue bond or the normal mechanisms that are used. And that statement is even from the mouth of a judge when we were sued over the use of the funds, the premise being that this was a pledging of future, like tax revenues or whatnot, and a judge ruled, no, it is not, and it was our position at that time, it's a windfall. At the time we marketed it and created a separate corporation to do the bonds, that very point was in play, because it is not a legal nor moral obligation of the state of Alaska, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, only of Northern Tobacco Securitization. And as such, the bonds were sold at a premium. The investor was paid for that risk. In other words, if for some reason the MSA failed and the tobacco company stopped to make payments, they weren't going to come back at the state, and they weren't going to come back to HFC. So to kind of maybe help in the process, the numbers, Devin's absolutely right. It's a moving target, but the target has gotten much more, it's a much friendlier environment right now because of as Mike pointed out, the overturning of some of these major lawsuits that were pending. So it is a substantial amount of money, but the risk to the state is minimal in the sense of how this was structured to begin with and how the corporation was created that issues those bonds. We, in essence, buy the cash flows from the state. The state, through the Commissioner of Revenue, releases to Northern Tobacco the rights with legislative approval to accept those revenues, and we go out and sell bonds behind them. And they are a unique instrument, these tobacco bonds. The first issuance that we did was $300 million. And that went all for, I believe, every dime of that went for schools. I think it was all schools. So I just wanted to try and help a little bit on some of the history with how that.
Okay, very good. Thank you. President Kelly.
Just a comment. I'm kind of new to this tobacco thing. I quit supporting it at retail, and it's 1972, so I'm new to it. But does if you pick something off the list on the bonding, like the prison, does that still, the design, construction, and approval of that still come through the legislature, since those funds would have come to the, that's just a normal process, this doesn't change any of that?
It doesn't change it, no, it has to be appropriate.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions for our panel of experts here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are going to hold this over for a little while. Time is on our side on this one. So.
I just had a couple of questions, and maybe it'll develop more. But I think that I heard Ms. Bresta say you're working on the financing and how the financing would work with Massu Borough for the prison there. So it's really, that's pretty much up in the air still. Is that right? How the financing of the prison would work after this? Or did I misunderstand that?
There's a couple of ideas that we're working through, so I wouldn't say it's up in the air as if it's, you know, floating, but we're trying to zero in and confirm some options. So,
and you'll come back to us on that when that's finalized.
Yes.
And then the second thing, and again, this may be needs to wait a while, but by naming the one prison in this legislation, I can't help but worry about what the impact is on the other prison projects around the state and how this might conceivably impact them. You know, the Yukon, Custer Twin, the Fairbanks, Kenai, Juneau. I mean, any feel for that?
Through the chair, Representative Curtula, Senate Bill 65 that you passed a couple of years ago did provide a number of the communities with a mechanism to enter into lease purchase agreements with the state. And so we have been in discussions, at least with one of the community jails, Kodiak, about them proceeding with that. And certainly the Matsu jail fits into the overall picture of the state's prison population and the impact on the regional jails. So I think that ends up being a whole nother discussion in terms of our prison population and how the Matsu prison fits into that, but I thought you all went through that when you passed Senate Bill 65, and now we're trying to deploy that. And it is an appropriation that will come back to the legislature should this be what the amendment is. Just like Representative Kelly, we do have the university projects in our capital budget, and so they're subject to your appropriation that way. This is a fund source for that purpose.
And if I recall that Senate Bill 65, it also included private prisons, which aren't under consideration currently.
So. That's correct.
Okay. Anything else for Kim?
No, I guess the last one is if there's any, and I think it's coming, I think that's what I'm hearing, is the cost estimates on the Natsu prison itself, whether we have any exact cost estimates on how much it's out there.
Through the chair, Representative Curtula, it's more of the approach that we're taking. We're considering some other options, such as a design, build, finance option by the private sector, and the Matsu Borough is interested in pursuing that as an option. So we've got some innovative approaches that we're still playing out, and we're meeting with the borough in a couple of weeks again to see where we are in that. So that's why we don't have a specific, all-encompassing proposal at this time, and we may not need one to come back before the legislature.
Actually, isn't that how we built Anchorage Jail? The city of Anchorage built it, and then we lease it back from there.
Yeah. Correct.
Sure. Thank you. Any other questions?
And maybe you answered this on the jail issue, but as I'm reading the title, it's very specific into what it's calling for, i.e. funds to go to university and the correctional facility. And I mentioned school construction earlier, and we have, money can be used for school construction, but how do this particular bond, if they aren't named, i.e. school construction, major maintenance, would that preclude them from that, if we sell this bond this time? Did I ask it right? Does that make sense?
Through the chair, are you asking if the legislature would like to use the proceeds for some other purpose? Could the legislature do that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question. Let me think about that. Get back to you.
Well, through the chair, Representative Jewell, I think that you could change. I don't know that the drafting of this legislation precludes the use of proceeds from a sale that's been described for projects that you're describing, major maintenance projects, school major maintenance projects. So I think if it required a changing of the title as part of the amendment that also changed the project list, that's a legal issue. But I think you could do it.
Oh, we can certainly change the title if we want to do that. I thought your question was down the line.
No.
Okay, well,
my
understood.
Question is, the way I read this title, it's very tight. I mean, you're much better off with tight title. So there's less thank you. I can understand that. But if you wanted to create but if we wanted to include school construction, but that wasn't in this title or addressed in this bill, within the pot of money, these bonds that we're going after, if they weren't included in here, would that preclude them? Preclude us from using the money on those kinds of things? That's my question. And
that
I think I might have
did
it better this time.
Yeah, so through the chair, if you pass this legislation and then subsequently decide you wanted to change the use of the proceeds, you're going to have a problem because the NTSC will have issued bonds and be trying to pay for the projects. And when you issue bonds, you have to identify what you're going to spend money on within certain parameters.
Okay.
So you would, if you were going to make a change, now would be the time.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Kelly.
Well, I think it eventually, I was going to flip it over, but I think Representative Jewell did that toward the tail end there about what happens if we do the 180 degree different from that. And there's something to be recommended for that maybe, but I'd like to think about it between now and when we get the answer back with certainty.
I think there's probably a couple ways to get where you want to go, Representative Jewell, but we don't need to do that here right now. So,
just commented that we, with the project not being designed or approved by the legislature and yet wired into the title, I just think we're
chatting about it. But.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, the Mat Su prison was authorized by the legislature, but it was a different mechanism with the Mat Su borough. And so it wasn't our intent to cram a brand new project down your throat, at least not in this case. But we know we'll have further discussions with you.
And I'm not arguing against the mechanism at all. I'm just curious about it because I wasn't here when you talked about it.
Sure. And if I read the title correctly, it says to finance the construction of a correction facility. So that could be any of them. Okay. Very good. Any other questions, comments for our panel of experts? See none. Thank you for joining us. As I mentioned, we'll put this deal over until another time.
Cheryl, I always like it when you say that you wouldn't fool us. It's that you're not fooling us.
Before we adjourn, we do have, I think, something else come up before the committee. Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. We've got a birthday today. It's Luann Christian over here. She's been here over 20 years in this building, working real hard for all of us. And on behalf of this committee, I wanted to thank her so much for all she does for each of us as individuals. And Mr. Chairman, I asked her what her birthday wish was, and she hoped that all of us as a group would work toward world peace, but if we fail, that she'd settle for a chocolate chip cookie from Billy Sullivan. I wonder if Representative Holmes can lead us in singing Happy Birthday, all of us.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Luann. Happy birthday to you.
My gift was a quick meeting.
Very good. All right. So that does conclude everything we have for today and this week. Next week, the pace is going to pick up a little bit more. We will just try to get by again with the 3 days. On Tuesday, we have an overview by the Alaska Mining Commissioner, the commission that actually Co-Chairman Schnell set up. So hopefully he'll be able to join us. And then if we have time, we'll take up bills previously heard. And I think it's possible we'll take up the veterans bill that Representative Lynn had at that time. And then on Wednesday, we have House Bill 12, which has to do TVs and monitors in motor vehicles. And House Bill 273 has to do PFDs, delayed payments for allowable absences. And then Thursday is eminent domain, limitation of eminent domain, House Bill 318. House Bill 334, municipal property tax deferral. And House Bill 274, dealing with public accountants. That must be Representative Hopper's. And did I miss that?
Well, you might know that on Tuesday we're starting at 2 instead of 1:30.
Ah, yes, very good. Okay, Tuesday starts at 2 o'clock, and the other days would be at the normal time at 1:30. Anything else to come before the committee? Hopefully the subcommittees are going well. And with that, we'll adjourn.
Thank you.